This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
All right, crossover podcast, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck. Happy 4th of July weekend extended, Beck.
Happy eve of finals, Mannix. And also, you're looking a little scruffy as the finals approach. Is this a finals beard or you just gotten lazy?
Well, it's more the latter, I would say. It's, you know, when I don't have to do boxing TV, which requires me to be cleaner, I let it go, especially in the summertime. Just let the scruff kind of grow in, and I roll with the punches there. So
DAZN has some kind of like Steinbrennerian Yankees policy, no facial hair or something?
No, they don't, but I'll tell you what, like I've worn kind of a beard adjacent on air before, and I watched it back and it just looked like it doesn't look like I had facial hair. It looked like I just got lazy and didn't shave. And I got to find that balance. Like, if you're going to wear facial hair on TV, you have to really have legitimate facial hair, not just 5 o'clock shadow extended. That's my big problem there. So, we'll maybe down the line. I don't know. I've experimented with shaving my head in the past, too. That's been an interesting look for me. But we continue to tinker, Howard, even in my now early 40s. Good podcast last week, Jermell Johnson. Super fan. Good to listen to that one. What do you got coming up this week?
This week we have Spencer Dinwiddie, Nets free agent to be, and of course, foremost NBA expert on NFTs, crypto, and all kinds of other things that I don't understand at all.
Yeah, I don't have any idea about crypto. I actually invested a little bit in crypto. I'm not going to say which one, but it was topical at the moment. And I'm like, you know what? Screw it. Let's see if this actually could pay off. It has not.
Always good to throw money into something that you know absolutely nothing about, Chris.
You don't throw a lot. Like, you're not saying you're throwing, like, you know, you're not putting a mortgage payment into it, but you're, you know, you put a little couple of bucks in there and see if it does anything. And it has not at this point for me. So I'm very interested to hear what Spencer Dinwiddie thinks. Because you're right, he's been at the forefront of all that cryptocurrency stuff.
He's way into this stuff, really smart about it. And he's got a new endeavor, new thing launching called Galaxy. Which is the creator's galaxy, and it is like Cameo meets Twitter meets the crypto part of it is in the distance, but it is a whole new way to engage with athletes, entertainers, others that you might want to engage with. So it's very cool.
Yeah, very cool. That'll come out on Friday. No need to subscribe to a different pod. It comes out on this feed. Just subscribe, rate, and review this one while you are listening to the podcast. All right, it is finals week, Howard, and I do want to get into the Suns-Bucks matchup. But as we often do, we kind of look back at one of the vanquished foes of the week before. And this is an opportunity now to look back on Atlanta's season. I mean, a terrific season for the Atlanta Hawks. They finished with their best winning percentage since 2016, their first playoff appearance since 2017, and just the second conference finals trip since the 1960s. Now, the real work, though, for the Hawks begins immediately. Atlanta, they already announced that Nate McMillan will return on a new deal. ESPN says that's a four-year deal for McMillan. Well-deserved, of course. And, you know, now you get into some of the roster maneuvering. John Collins is a restricted free agent this summer. Trae Young is eligible for a max extension this summer. Kevin Huerter is extension eligible. Clint Capella is extension eligible. They need to find a backup point guard, especially if Chris Dunn can't be that guy. Here's Hawks GM Travis Schlenk on Atlanta's roster issues this summer.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's the name of the game, right? I mean, that's why we have a salary cap. Every team has to make those decisions. And it does get hard. You know, obviously it's a lot easier when you have guys on rookie scale deals to build out your roster. But once those deals come up and, you know, those players start making bigger money, you know, you really are limited on the ways to add to your team, mid-level exceptions and things of that nature. But, you know, we won't be in a situation where we have a lot of cap space like we had last year.
Howard, Atlanta spent $160 million in free agency last summer, but that may look like pocket change compared to what the Hawks may dole out this summer. So what do you think about Atlanta's future?
Look, the future's bright regardless of what direction they choose now. And kudos to the Hawks for as quickly as possible locking up Nate McMillan. That was clearly the right thing to do. I don't know that it was ever really in doubt, but I guess in this league, you and I have seen everything. You never know until it's actually announced. And so glad to see it. He did an incredible job. And, you know, the Hawks were one of the great stories of this season, a breakthrough year for them. And not, you know, sometimes a team has a breakthrough and you think, well, I see how they pulled it off this year. I don't see the sustainability, though, or I have questions. I have no questions about this team. They've drafted brilliantly. And the most controversial move that they made for Trae Young looks a lot better now than it did the last couple of years. And, you know, look, you always knew Trae Young had talent. It was always going to be a matter of how does he evolve and how do they what kind of pieces do they surround him with and how does it all fit together? Well, it's fitting together brilliantly right now. And the other piece they got in that deal where they swapped the Luke rights for Trae is they got Cam Reddish, who, when healthy, is looking like a real player too. So that was what they were looking for. That was what Travis Schlenk was going for, was added value in making that move. So you've got your stud superstar to build around in Trae Young. You've got great role players like Kevin Huerter, like Hunter, like Reddish. The veterans that they brought in, some worked out better than others. But like they've got the right mix of youth and veterans right now. They've got shooting. They've got length. They've got versatility. I mean, I don't have any questions really about... Now, you mentioned backup point guard, right? If Chris Dunn's healthy... And I think it's a player option for $5 million. And after an injured season, he's probably not getting much more. He could still be the backup, you know, guard at both spots. And he's a great defender. It's not another primary ball handler. But, you know, if Lou Williams is sticking around, then maybe you don't need that. I think they're fine. I mean, like the only thing is going to be how much do you think John Collins is worth? How much do you think you can afford to give him with respect to the luxury tax and future contract commitments? Because you mentioned it, Young and Huerter are both up for extensions. It's going to get really expensive really fast. But this is a team that even like this was a down year for the East. It was a weird year for the East where a bunch of teams underachieved. Even in a year where everybody's back to full strength next year, the Hawks could be a top four team in the East. I think they have that much talent.
Now, I'm bullish on the Hawks moving forward for all the reasons you mentioned. The core of this team, most of it is age 23 and younger. I'm talking about Young, Collins, Huerter, DeAndre Hunter. Throw in Reddish, Okongwu into that mix. These guys are 20 and 21. So the ceiling is really high. And even when you go to the, quote, veterans, the older players, I mean, I find it hard to believe that Clint Capela is still only 27. It feels like he's been around forever, but he's only 27 years old. Bogdanović is only 28. Both those guys under contract for at least the next couple of years. They've got the 20th pick in this year's draft. As you mentioned, Schlenk and his crew have been really good at finding pieces that fit. And, you know, we haven't talked much about DeAndre Hunter there. Like, Hunter was a big part of this team's resurgence during the second half of the regular season. He missed most of the playoffs. You bring him back into the mix at that two-guard spot, you become even deeper and even better. So I think the Hawks, you mentioned top four. To me, this Atlanta team that went 27-11 under Nate McMillan, they should compete for a top two spot next year. If everybody's healthy and back in the mix, I see no reason to believe why they shouldn't be battling with Brooklyn, with Philadelphia, with Milwaukee, for one of those top two spots in the Eastern Conference. If there's a weakness, like I thought the Bucks maybe exposed a couple of things with Atlanta's front court. You know, the Bucks are a really physical team. And when they went Lopez, Bobby Portis, I thought Atlanta wilted a little bit under that front court size. Maybe you try to go out and add one of those pieces to the mix with one of your exceptions. But overall, this is a really solid roster. And you mentioned Collins. Like, Collins kind of reminds me of DeAndre Ayton in Phoenix. Like, Collins' numbers aren't spectacular. I think they're actually down from a year ago. But one of the reasons they're down is because Collins kind of has embraced team basketball, and he's ceded some of the responsibility, the offense, to guys like Young and Huerter and all the guys that took off this year offensively. Some of those numbers came at the cost of John Collins. But when they needed him, he's played extremely well. So you got to be prepared for somebody, if it's not Atlanta, for somebody to make him an offer sheet of well in excess of $100 million on the contract next year. And as long as you're willing to pay that freight, John Collins will be back, and you should be right back in this mix next season.
And this is not a time for their ownership. And I always say this, easy for us to say, it's not our checkbook, it's not our millions or our billions or our luxury tax bill. But this is not a time for ownership to get cute and say, hey, Travis, we know you assembled this incredible roster, breakthrough season. The sky's the limit for these guys. But we're going to need you to let one of your best core players, one of your great draft finds in John Collins, just walk away because we don't want to pay the luxury tax. Like, I get it. A lot of bills are coming due. But you've got an opportunity here. And what I think we have been reminded of this season, we're reminded of it every year, but dramatically this season, is that the window's never as big as you think it is. The opportunities are never as plentiful as you think. The chance to make a deep run is never guaranteed, no matter what you've got. You're always an injury or two away from things just falling apart. It can turn sideways. So when you've got the opportunity in front of you, be all in and keep the guys that you discovered and you developed. And yeah, I mean, I know there's a lot of bodies to fit in there, and there's a lot of guys to keep happy in terms of minutes and role. Letting John Collins walk away would seem like a mistake to me. But about the top of the conference, look, Milwaukee, they're in the finals right now, right? There's nothing bad we could say about them while they're in the finals. But they've got some wonkiness, right? There's not guaranteed to be back here year after year. Philly, they got to figure out their whole Ben Simmons thing. And the Nets are the superpower lying in wait once they have everybody healthy, right? But those guys are all in their 30s. You could look at the Hawks right now and say, you know what? They're not necessarily a contender next season. But as you look at their other teams in their path or the other teams at the top, you know, the Hawks are the team that 3 or 4 years from now, just as I've finished saying, nothing is guaranteed. But the Hawks are the team that if things keep going the way they should be going with this young core, 2, 3, 4 years from now, that is the team that is locked in among the top in the East.
I agree. And, you know, making sure, like, look, Collins would worry me a little bit if I'm a Hawks fan because Atlanta did discuss trades with him before the deadline. To be fair, a lot of those calls were incoming from teams that were kicking the tires on John Collins, and they found that the price was too high for them to extract him. But the fact that that's even being contemplated, I'd be a little nervous that there might be a salary ceiling that the Hawks would have, and there are a bunch of teams out there with the kind of cap space that would make a run at a 23-year-old forward with, you know, a lot of upside still in his career. So that would worry me. But if he comes back, I mean, they're just so skilled. Like, all these positions are manned by really skilled guys. There's no reason to believe that if they're healthy, they can't be right back in this mix next year. Herder's extension, I think, is one of the more interesting things that's out there. Our friend Bobby Marks over at ESPN linked Herder's contract extension to the 4-year, $56 million deal that Luke Kennard signed with the Clippers. If I can get Herder for 4 at 56, I'd probably do that if I was Atlanta, because I think Herder's better than Kennard. I think Herder...
Oh,
you know,
by far.
I know, we've seen... like, but I think we've seen only just the tip of the iceberg with Kevin Herder. I think there's so much more to come.
Which is why that number's going to be higher.
But, I mean, I'm just saying, like, if that really is the ballpark for where you can get him, I would jump on it. I think he's going to outplay that contract very quickly if you can get him on that type of deal.
Yeah. I agree. He's also, I think, got some defensive capabilities that Kennard does not. And, you know, he's got that length and height. Like, he fits really nicely with what they've got. The hard part is Trae Young, it's automatic, right? He's a max extension.
Right.
Herder is the one where you have to figure out, okay, what does this do to our salary cap in 2022, 23, everything else? What do we think we can afford? How valuable is he? I have no doubt they'll find that number.
Well, you know what's interesting about Herder, too, is like when I was working up this podcast and thinking about what to talk about with Herder, like I was reminded looking back at, remember when Dwayne Wade did the jersey swap with Kevin Herder a couple of years ago? Remember how weird that felt at the time? It's like, why is D. Wade swapping jerseys? Yeah, like with Kevin Herder. Like D. Wade, I think, saw something in him. Like I think he saw potential for him to be the guy we saw this season and in the playoffs and be even better. Just he has no fear. He, as you said, can defend a little bit. He can shoot from three. I mean, look back to game 7 of that Philadelphia series. Kevin Herter pulled their fat out of the fire. Trae Young was stinking out the joint for the first three quarters. Kevin Huerter was the one making shots. I think he finished with 27. Like, that's the kind of play I think you can expect for Kevin Huerter. So he's must re-sign. I mean, I don't think they're not in a position yet where they have to worry entirely about it. But if you can get him on a reasonable deal, I would jump at it. Because if you can get him locked up for the next 5 years, I think that guy's going to outperform whatever contract you sign him to.
Agreed.
Yeah. So Atlanta's got some stuff to think about, but it's more money related than it is roster related, in my opinion, at this point. All right, let's talk about the finals now. We've got one. Phoenix against Milwaukee Light. And I say Milwaukee Light because I don't know the status of Giannis Antetokounmpo. As we record this, it's after the media avails on before game one. And no real insight shed by the Bucks. Mike Budenholzer said Giannis was progressing, whatever that means. Chris Middleton said he told Giannis to do what's best for him, whatever that means. I would expect, Howard, for Giannis to be on the court during this series. I have no idea how effective he's going to be. As young as he is and as durable as he's been, that was one of the more horrific hits, knee hits, that I have seen that have not resulted in a torn ACL or a torn MCL or some kind of significant injury. That was bad. That knee went away. You are not supposed to go if you're a knee joint. So I would expect him to be out there, but what are we going to look at when we're out there? What are we seeing when we're out there? Does he become a jump shooter? If he does, that's good news for Phoenix because Giannis is not a particularly good jump shooter. Does he have the same explosiveness? Does he have the same aggressiveness? How hobbled will he be defensively? That's one of his strengths of his game. Like, we can look, we can dissect this from all angles, and we will a couple of different ways. But in my mind, it's Giannis's health and how much he's able to contribute. If it's, you know, below 50%, it's a wrap. I'm sorry, as well as the Bucks played against the Hawks, they're not beating Phoenix without a healthy Giannis. If it's 75-80%, the Bucks have more than a shot of winning the series. That, to me, is paramount as we go into game one.
Yeah, like, to me, with the uncertainty going into the series, it's Suns in six. But with the caveat that if Giannis plays and is himself, this whole thing, you know, you have to reassess the whole thing. But if he doesn't play at all, it might be Suns in five. And that's no disrespect to Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday and Brooke Lopez, the three guys who had incredible games to close out the Hawks. But that was the Hawks. The Suns are not the Hawks. Not defensively, not experience-wise. And yeah, I know, like, the Suns, like, they don't have finals experience outside of Jay Crowder. But Chris Paul is about as savvy a vet as you're going to get. And, you know, even Devin Booker, Book's in what, like, year six? Like, this is a team that has certainly got more under its belt overall than the Hawks do. And as much as they were a surprise to make it this far, there's a certain like legitimacy to them that I don't think you could say of the Hawks. So without Giannis, without that other element, I just don't see how the Bucks make this a series. And we don't know. I think the gruesomeness of that knee injury, right? You're exactly right, Chris. Like, that is the exact way to put it. It's like the worst knee injury, like, visually that you could see that did not result in a bunch of stuff blowing up. I think everybody expected the worst when we saw it. Thank God it wasn't. But it does mean things were, you know, I'm going to play doctor for a second. Stuff was probably like stretched, strained, pushed to its limit, right? That doesn't recover immediately necessarily, and it might leave you a little more vulnerable. I don't know. Can you just slap a sleeve on it and say I'm good to go? I think this is going to be, again, I'm speculating out my ass. I think this is not one of those, oh, if he could just tolerate the pain. I don't think this is a pain tolerance thing. I think this is like, you only go out there if you're sure you're not going to injure yourself worse or that you haven't put too much undue stress on your other leg. That's what it looks like to me. All right, done talking out of my ass. I would think that, you know, we'll get more clarity in the next couple of days. My guess is we don't see him in game one. We'll see what they say between games one and two. They'll probably play possum with this the same way that the Clippers did with Kawhi, where every game it was like, we'll announce game to game that he's out, as if it was like there never seemed to be any chance Kawhi was coming back, and they just kept playing possum. I think they'll do the same thing with Giannis. This is another organization where they love to be secretive. But I like what the Bucks have. I know that some of those guys are gamers and have proven it, but the Bucks aren't beating the Suns if Giannis isn't himself.
And my fear is that Giannis comes back, you know, with that heavily padded knee and becomes something of a decoy, where unless he's able to find lightning in a bottle and become this marksman from three-point range, he's not as effective as you need him to be. And yeah, like I said, I do expect Giannis to be out there at some point, but I don't know what kind of condition he's going to be in. But let's make the argument, Howard, that Giannis does have kind of a miracle recovery, maybe in time for game two. And he is out there on the floor, 75-80%, able to get to the basket, finish at the rim, be a top-level defensive player. What else are we looking at here with this series? Because for me, it's how effective Jrue Holiday is going to be on those Bucks guards. Holiday, you know, a lot of attention justifiably was paid to Brook Lopez going off in that game five, Bobby Portis stepping in and playing well for the last two games of that series. But Jrue Holiday's defense was a huge reason that the Bucks are here right now. I mean, he did what John Horst wanted him to do. You know, he proved to be that defensive specialist in these playoffs. And he's going to have to do it again. I don't know who he's going to get deployed on in this series. Is it going to be Chris Paul? Is it going to be Devin Booker? I don't know. But whoever he goes up against, he's going to have to force them to have some erratic shooting nights for the Bucks to have a chance, because that's clearly the strength of this Phoenix offense, the backcourt. And Jrue Holiday is clearly the defensive stopper that the Bucks have to throw against it.
Yeah, and look, if you're going to say that the Bucks have any hope with or without Giannis, it's that part of their strength is that Middleton and Jrue Holiday are both really tough, versatile defenders, and Middleton's got all that length to throw at you as well. So do you start off Middleton on Chris Paul to try to cut off passing lanes and, you know, do the head of the snake thing, and then have Jrue on Devin Booker? Because Holiday can guard Booker, and he can, you know, pester the crap out of him, fluster him a bit, make it hard on him. You could switch it the other way, of course, just go the natural Holiday on Paul. The Bucks have options there. And so that is certainly one curiosity. The other one, frankly, is, especially if they don't have Giannis to start off, like, you found some things with Brook Lopez the other day. Now, yep, it's old school ball, you know, and you were able to bully the Hawks to great effect. Can Brook Lopez do the same against DeAndre Ayton? Like, Ayton doesn't have this the bulk and strength that Brook Lopez does. Not to say that Ayton's not a big, strong dude, but like, Lopez is a beast. Are you going to try to go a little old school, throwing the ball into the post and let Brook Lopez, you know, bully Ayton, maybe even get him in foul trouble? Is that, you know, it feels like a throwback discussion to be talking about feeding the post and going through the big, but help them close out the Hawks.
I mean, you don't have much of a choice if Giannis is out. That's got to be a big part of your offense. I am, though, skeptical that Brook Lopez can do what he did to Collins and Capella to DeAndre Ayton. I mean, you're
I
right.
Agree.
Lopez is a physically stronger guy, more physically mature guy, but Ayton is just so long and so good defensively. Like, he's one of the biggest reasons that defense was top 10 in the NBA during the regular season. One of the biggest reasons that I think they're number two in defensive efficiency in these playoffs, just behind Milwaukee. That's a tall task. That's going to be tough. It's going to be other guys making three-point shots. I mean, if I was Phoenix, if they did that, I wouldn't double. I'd say, if Brook Lopez beats us, we've got maybe bigger issues. Like, I don't want them. If you want to try to get two-pointers with Brook Lopez over and over again, we're going to trust our big man in the middle to make it tough for you. We're just not going to give you open three-point shots from any number of guys, Pat Connaughton, Middleton, Holiday. We won't give them a chance to beat us. We're going to let Brook Lopez try to two-point us to death, and if you can win a championship that way, God bless you. More power to you there. One other thing about this series, there's still the asterisk series in the water supply. Like, do you buy any of that? Like, because I don't. Like, I don't believe that 10 years from now we're going to be looking back and dissecting Phoenix's path to the finals and saying that championship doesn't really count. Because, like, I had to look up who won the championship 10 years ago. It was the Lakers in 2010. The Mavericks in 2011. Like, we forget these things very quickly. And I'm sure in years past, there have been teams that have had an equally easy walk, or at least in terms of injuries with opponents, to the finals that Phoenix has had. We just don't remember them because time causes memory lapses when it comes to stuff like this. So I'm not buying the whole asterisk championship. I'm not buying the Phoenix wouldn't have done this in a different year. I mean, a championship is a championship. They all count the same in my book.
They do. And, you know, I'll say the same thing about this finals that I said about last year, even before we got to the finals last year and people were talking about, well, bubble this and asterisk that, whatever. And I said, listen, we're going to know if there should be an asterisk or not by one thing. Who's actually in the finals? If those teams look legit, if they look the part, we're going to say it was legitimate. If it had turned out to be Pacers versus, you know, trying to think of who was the lower seed in the West, that's how bad my memory is. If it had been Pacers Thunder, the Thunder made the playoffs, right? If it had been Pacers Thunder, we would have said, maybe it needs an asterisk because two teams that should not have on paper made the finals made it. That's not the case today. The Bucks have been a contender in some form or another, maybe some suspicions, but a contender for the last 3 years, at least. The Suns made a huge leap that none of us saw coming, right? None of us. But we can't let what we thought of them in December color how we view them now. They have a Hall of Fame point guard who is still playing as if he's in his prime instead of being 36 in Chris Paul. They have a young stud in Devin Booker. They have an evolving young stud in DeAndre Ayton. They've got a nice cast of supporting cast, depth. They look the part, Chris. This is not some random slapdash team that made the finals. So that's how I know it's legit. That's why there's no asterisk. If people want to point to, well, what would have happened if LeBron and AD were healthy? If Kawhi were healthy? Yeah, we can play that game. And yes, this was the most unusual year you and I have seen in terms of stars being injured in the playoffs, but there are always stars injured every year. And we don't go back slapping, you know, or slapping asterisk, you know, backdating all these other finals. So it's a silly discussion, as it always is. We have two very legitimate teams in the finals. That's what matters.
By the way, would you have ever thought 2 years ago that we'd be talking about Chris Paul opting out of his contract after this season and signing a 3-year, $100 million contract extension this summer?
Like at age 36?
Age 36, like taking him all the way up until he's about his age 40 season. Like, and look, I wouldn't, and we'll get into this in a future podcast. It's more of an off-season discussion, but I wouldn't hesitate to give Chris Paul that kind of deal because, like, first of all, if he opted into his contract and then signed something shorter on the back end as an extension, that's one way to do it, or sign a 3-year deal outright. But I think his game is going to age incredibly well because it has aged incredibly well, at least the last two seasons. Yeah. You know, with Oklahoma City and now with Phoenix, he's proven that he's not reliant on athleticism, if he ever was. And he's so crafty, and I hate using that word because it's kind of a catch-all type of word, but he is kind of crafty out there defensively that he can make up for a lack of athleticism on that end of the floor. And you know, offensively, he's kind of dribble, get to your spot in the mid-range, take that shot, use your on-court vision to create offense for others. Like he's, you know, and plus, on top of that, he's figured something out physically since that season in Houston that ended with the groin strain or the hamstring strain that cost him the last two games of the conference finals. He's figured something out that he's been able to play 70 plus games each of the last two seasons. Yeah. So I wouldn't blink at giving Chris Paul that type of money. And if you're Phoenix, we talk about, you know, people paying, you know, Robert Sarver, pay, get your checkbook out. Don't be nickel and dime in this guy. Not when you've come this far. Don't screw this up.
Sarver's got a long track record of nickel and
diming. This is what I'm saying. Like, I'm, let me tell you, you probably talk to some of the same people I do. There are people that believe Chris Paul will be a Nick next year. Like, not they're not basing that on anything other than, you know, a premonition or just intuition. Like, that Sarver will find a way to screw this up. And if he does, that would be... That is as big a setback as you can get. Because there's as much as I like Cameron Payne, I don't think you want him as your full-time point guard when you could have Chris Paul in that spot. That's, I think that goes without saying.
If Sarver screwed this up, he will not be welcome in the state of Arizona again.
Like,
if you lose Chris Paul over a contract negotiation, when the guy came in And he's not the only one, right? It's him and it's Monty Williams and it's the growth of the young guys. It's all these factors that catapult them from lottery team to the NBA Finals. But Chris Paul's a huge, huge part of it. If you screw this up, if you show disrespect in the negotiations, if you try to get cute and you lose him, holy moly. But that all said, look, I'd be shocked beyond belief. We've seen weirder things. I'd be shocked beyond belief if Chris Paul's anywhere but Phoenix next season.
Yeah.
The season they've had, the season he's had, and plus it's close to home in LA. Like, why would he want to go anywhere else? The relationship he has with Monty Williams, there's zero reason, zero, aside from the Robert Sarver factor, maybe.
I agree. I mean, you heard Chris Paul kind of allude to this in his interview after winning the conference finals. Like, this was a orchestrated move. Like, Oklahoma City didn't dump him on Phoenix. He wanted to go to Phoenix. He wanted to play with Devin Booker. He wanted to play for Monty Williams. As you mentioned, close to LA where his family lives. He's got everything he wants. He's on a contender, obviously, a team that could win a championship this year. So the stars are aligned, but I have seen crazier things, Howard, where money gets in the way. And
look, we have, right? Like, several years ago, we would have said there's no way Kawhi Leonard ever leaves San Antonio. And the next thing you know, he's forcing his way out and he ends up in Toronto and all this. And then winning a championship in Toronto, we've never seen a guy be a finals MVP and leave in free agency the same summer, in his prime. We have seen weirder things, mostly involving Kawhi Leonard. But Chris Paul, from the Sun side of it, the concern has to be, right, all the miles, and he's 36, and this new contract could take him through 39, and it's unprecedented for a point guard, especially at his size, to be playing at a really high level that deep into their 30s. But we're in a different era with sports science and training and everything else. Chris Paul takes incredible care of himself. On top of that, you alluded to this. Here are the things that don't age well for guards. If you rely a lot on your explosiveness and your ability to, get to the rack, that's not Chris Paul. Or blowing past guys, that's never been, I shouldn't say never been Chris Paul. Earlier in his career, there was a lot of that. So those things you don't have to worry about. Guys who don't have a jump shot and need all that, the Russell Westbrook types. Russell Westbrook will not age well. Chris Paul is just a phenomenal precision shooter from various spots on the court, and he will always be able to get that shot off, I think. Now, your knees go at some point. You get a little less lift. That affects your jumper. Okay. Something will affect him eventually. But the usual things, plus the guys who are really smart and know about positioning and just anticipation and reading the opposition at both ends, and Chris Paul is that guy, one of the smartest players we've seen. Those guys also tend to age well. So it'll be like the Suns will certainly be biting their lip just a little bit in whatever that contract number is and hoping for the best, because the age is the age. But there's a really good chance that it pays off just fine.
I mean, he doesn't really even lift on his jump shot anymore anyway. Like I say this complimentary, his way of getting shots over defenders is to just add more arc to it. That's kind of what it is. Like, he goes and does that dribble across the lane, and when a big man steps out, he just arcs the shot over them. It's not like he's leaping into the air to get an extra inch or two. He's just adjusting that way. So all those things suggest he's going to be just fine over the next couple of years, at least, and he needs to stay in Phoenix for the sake of the sanity of the Suns organization. I want to finish, Howard, with a story that broke after we went off the air recording the podcast last week. We've spent a lot of time on this pod talking about the future of Damian Lillard. I'm sure we'll continue to do that. But the Blazers added something of a new wrinkle to that last week when they announced officially Chauncey Billups was going to be the head coach. We knew that was coming. That had been known to the world on Friday of the week before, announced officially on Tuesday. And then they had the press conference where the issue that has dogged Chauncey Billups for the last couple of weeks, at least, as he has emerged as a head coaching candidate, went public. That issue being the sexual assault settlement he had in 2000 off an incident that happened in 1997 while he was a rookie with the Celtics. Now, the Blazers began that press conference with a statement from Neil O'Shea. They then had Chauncey make a statement where he said he learned a lot from that experience. Here, though, is how they handled the first question to Chauncey Billups about that incident.
Hi, Jason Quick with The Athletic. You said the 1997 incident shaped you in unbelievable ways. Can you maybe elaborate on that and how it helped shape you?
Jason, we appreciate your question. We've addressed this. It's been asked and answered. So happy to move on to the next question here, Aaron.
So, Howard, to me, that was a clinic in how not to handle a situation like that. And I was kind of, I wasn't surprised that they went this way, but it didn't make a lot of sense to me because, look, Chauncey's been talking to the media for 2 decades. He has been in the media for a couple of years. Like, he knows how to handle tough-ish questions. And I'm sure he went in with a idea of things he would say and things he wouldn't. And you and I have seen where you've asked tough questions before. You don't always get the answer that you're looking for, but you do get an answer back in return. I was surprised. Again, I used that word. I guess I wasn't surprised, but it seemed like a better move for the Blazers would have been just let Chauncey talk. Like, let him answer all these questions as he wants to answer them, and then move on. Because the alternative is what happened, where you had the question shut down, the video of that question getting shut down, going viral across social media, them getting pilloried for it in the process. And then you had the fallout, which is like local reporters. I was reading Jason Quick, who asked that question that we just listened to, John Canzano. They all wrote these scathing columns about how this situation was handled. And you will see, I'm sure, in the coming weeks and months that this is going to be something of a lingering issue that's still around Chauncey Billups when it could have been addressed and dealt with in that moment. That's just how I kind of viewed it. How did you view how the Blazers addressed the Billups stuff?
Same as you. Really disappointing. You just cringe when you hear the spokesperson's voice basically saying, what was it, next question or whatever.
Saying that's been asked and answered, basically,
which it wasn't. No. And the thing is, you know, look.
Yeah.
Chauncey Billups said earlier in that press conference, you do things in your youth, you learn from them. Something to that effect. He was not admitting anything about this incident in question, about any of those allegations specifically. You don't expect anybody is going to address anything like that specifically. The best you can do from a reporter's standpoint is to get them to talk about, how they view it now, looking back. And if Chauncey Billups opens the door by saying, I have learned things, while alluding vaguely to this incident and these allegations, then the exact right question is the one that Jason Quick of The Athletic asked. Can you elaborate a little bit on what you've learned? That's a fair question. It's not a leading question. It's not a gotcha. It gives Chauncey Billups, as the person having to address this, all the room in the world to take it whichever direction. And he's the one who opened the door by saying, you learn things. He should have been allowed to answer it. I dare say he should have actually just answered it anyway. You don't have to do what the what the publicist says. You can say, listen, no. I want to address this. He should want to put these things to rest to the best that you can. By the way, I don't think there is any putting it to rest. There never will be, because there was a financial settlement in civil court. There were never criminal charges brought. We will not get, from a legal standpoint, any satisfactory resolution as the public. This will always be there, and people will decide how they want to view Chauncey Billups, the Blazers, and this incident. That is in the eye of the beholder. Everybody will view it a little differently. But Chauncey Billups, knowing that this will not go away because of that ambiguity, because there was no legal resolution, for him to put people's minds at ease, if that's even possible, you'd try to address it as well as you can. And he seemed willing to do it, and somebody with the organization decided he shouldn't. That's a huge mistake, because it's now still lingering, and they look bad in the process, and it looks like they've got something to hide, that they're afraid of this. And when Neil O'Shea, the GM, has already said, oh, we did a background check, we are satisfied with the investigation that we commissioned, that he was not guilty of these things, take our word for it, which is literally what he said.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's not enough. That's not enough. And if, you know, so you've made a mistake and compounded the mistake by the way you handled it. And I'm not saying necessarily it was a mistake to hire him. Like, that's a really complicated issue in itself. But the handling of it was awful. I will be curious to see if they try to, I don't know, re-engage on this down the road. Does Chauncey do a sit down with somebody in the media to discuss this more head on, to try to put this, again, to rest seems like the wrong term because maybe it's never put to rest. But there is more that he could have addressed. I wonder if he will seek that out or agree to somebody else who is seeking that from him.
I mean, there was a lot of, beyond that, there were some bizarre moments in that press conference. I mean, days before, we had read the report from Chris Haynes over at Yahoo, is a very good relationship with Damian Lillard, that effectively said Lillard was not involved in the coaching search. And then you had Neil Olshey say that Lillard was involved in every aspect of the coaching search, from, you know, being on the Zoom calls with Mike D'Antoni, Chauncey Billups, Becky Hammon, the three finalists for that job. You know, said he talked to Lillard about it all the time. It seemed just like a, it just is this, and I don't want to make this about Damian Lillard because we're going to go down this rabbit hole, I think, every week it feels like, as something evolves in this situation, but that seemed like a somewhat bizarre thing to kind of throw out there. I mean, it's probably true. Like, I actually believe that's more true than the idea that Lillard wasn't involved. Like, that didn't make a lot of sense to me. But, you know, it just seemed to create a further disconnect between the Blazers and Damian Lillard, which could ultimately lead to a divorce between the two sides.
Yeah, there's been so much kind of just conflicting whispers and speculation out there on Lillard's future and also his role in the hiring of Chauncey Billups. I think it's pretty clear that, you know, I think he had said it outright at one point that, you know, Chauncey and Jason Kidd were guys that he was interested in having as a coach. They hired Chauncey. The backlash because of the sexual assault allegations put Lillard in an uncomfortable spot, and so he tried to push back on that, first on social media and then through the Chris Haynes report, seemingly, that made it sound like, you know, this was affecting the way he thought about his future with the franchise. If you're the Blazers, everything that Lillard feels, wherever it's coming from, whatever's whatever's weighing on him is your concern. You don't want to do anything that's going to end up in him demanding a trade. I don't think that's happening right now. I've always been a skeptic about the idea that Lillard's forcing his way out at this stage with all these years left on his contract. And whatever he may say publicly, Chauncey Billups seems to be the guy or among the guys that he was in favor of having as his coach. So as long as Chauncey Billups is a good coach and Neil Olshey makes productive roster changes this summer, I expect we will see Damian Lillard in a Blazer uniform opening night and throughout next season.
Yeah, and I mean, look, as you begin the Billups era, it goes without saying, like, hiring veteran assistant coaches is paramount. I've been told that they are talking to Scott Brooks, the former Wizards coach, about a lead assistant job on that staff. If I was Neil Olshey and Chauncey Billups, I would also make a strong run at Steve Clifford, who would bring that kind of defensive-minded mentality you need on a team that was god-awful defensively last year. That's big. You know, how Chauncey's able to fill out that staff is going to be really important to their long-term success. Brooks, I think Mark Stein reported that Brooks could be on the Lakers staff as well. I think that's a more likely scenario, but he'd be a good hire for Chauncey's staff as a lead assistant as well. Howard, looking forward to Spencer Dinwiddie on Friday. We'll be back, you and I, next week talking about how something crazy, I'm sure, has happened in these NBA Finals after Game 3 of that series. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you can download podcasts. Howard, we'll talk next week.
Always a pleasure, my friend.